You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
Something really cool I came across. All kinds of things. I mean, there's a million things coming at me every day. People are like, where do you come up with this stuff? They just fall on me all over the place. But I thought this was kind of cool. More than 3,000 years ago, in the book of Leviticus in the Bible, it described a thing called gleaning, quote, gleaning. It's an effective way to feed the poor, and that's what Leviticus was talking about. Farmers were instructed to leave behind a small part of their harvest on the edge of their field or their vineyard for the hungry to, as a Bible describes it, glean. All right? What does that have to do with anything except now, like today? Well, not all that long ago, a man named John Van Hegnel, who was a volunteer in a Phoenix soup kitchen, brought the idea to life right here in America. He noticed fruit left unpicked on suburban backyard trees. You know something? And he recruited volunteers to glean that remaining harvest and distribute it through local churches. But you didn't know that, did you? That led John Van Hegnel to pursue other sources of surplus food and launch the nation's first food bank in 1967. And we honor the work and compassion for everybody who realizes there is food there that's left there, really, as John did. It's literally hanging on the trees, ready to be picked before it goes bad. And I just love it when people are in that business, food preparation business, and realize, wait a minute, what are we doing throwing away this food and stuff? There are people who will eat it. Let's give it to them to do. And that was God's idea 3,000 years ago. It's in the Bible, in Leviticus. You can check it out.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the Sound of Life.
We get an inkling of how God is out to rescue us when he came in the form of a man. That would be Jesus. You see, we cannot look at God at all. I always think of it kind of like the sun. The sun can't do anything about its intenseness. God created the sun, so it's more powerful than that. But, anything that's metal, a metal beam gets close enough to the sun, it just melts. Boom, it's gone. That's the way we are with God. In our current form, we cannot anywhere near God. So what does God do? He sends his son, Jesus. Looks like us, right? Except he doesn't act like us. Oh, no, he acts like God. He is going after who? Rescuing people. First of all, people who are physically disabled, people who are blind, people who are outcast, people who are shunned by other people. You know, he becomes a servant, literally becomes a servant, washing the feet of his disciples to show you what God's attitude is toward you as a rescuer. Wow, pretty cool. Now, I got that from Dr. David Jeremiah last night. I just happened to see a couple minutes. I just went by, and he was answering a question, which I don't even know what it was. But that's the way he was saying. I thought that is really pretty cool. And all you have to do to get in on God's love, to believe. This is incredible. Absolutely incredible. His guy was buying a generator recently. Can't imagine why, down in Florida, down in Jacksonville, Florida. He's in that big box store, you know, buying a generator. And he's standing there. His name is Alec. He realizes the man beside him is not only buying one generator, he's buying 100 generators. The guy said, I take 100 of these. Now, they had them all stacked up. I saw the photograph. You don't get to see the man, but you get to see behind him when he's talking on the phone, probably to his wife, you know, making sure it's okay. Can I get 100 of these to send to people in the Bahamas because they really need them? I mean, a lot of people need them. We just do our part, right? He also bought meals, food stuff that are going to be used as well. He spent almost $50,000 on that. Right there, standing right there to do that. That was kind of stunning, wasn't it? And then he just, you know, slipped away. He's redeeming the opportunity that God gave him to do that. And right about now, somebody in the Bahamas got lights because this man was standing there at the store and said, yeah, I want to get those generators.
The Sound of Life.
We got to tell you about an elementary school teacher by the name of Amanda Cox. She was short of pencils one day, so she asked her students, can you loan everybody a pencil? Spread it around. And one little boy said, I want to know if I can keep mine that my mom gave me. And she said, well, of course you can. And she must have been kind of curious. And then a couple of minutes later, he said, no, I'll share a couple. She said, okay. So the teacher got a handful of them. She's over sharpening the pencils and getting a good look at them and realized why that young man wanted to keep his pencils, because his mother had written inspirational messages on every one of those pencils. It's pretty cool. Maybe like messages like, you are phenomenal, never give up, proud of you every day. Ooh, that's a good one. I love you. There are things that you want to say, probably don't get said in the busyness of a morning. Follow your dreams. You will change the world. A lot of inspirational messages. 21 inspirational messages in his 21 pencils, and he was sharing them with the rest. And she thought about it, and she's the teacher. Thought, you know, that probably just takes a few minutes. A little extra time she carved out, and it'll light you up for the whole day in school. It's amazing. Imagine the look on a child's face when they're reminded that they are important, talented, loved, knowledgeable, and so much more. And of course, I know about it because this teacher posted it. She was so taken back, you know. So remember, you may be the only one telling and reminding them these things, and every child needs to know they are valued.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
I had an opportunity to move into a situation that a lot of people don't have an opportunity to do that. It was a house that had been for sale at least for a year. So that was kind of good and bad about sitting for a year. One thing is that there's a lot of spiders that think that they run the place now. And so we're kind of in the process of saying, out the door. There you go. That kind of thing. It's pretty amazing. But all the appliances are new. See, it was redone. It's all new paint and stuff like that. And I was thinking about it, and because I don't have hot water yet, which is a whole other story. Don't go there yet. But, and maybe today. Hopefully today. But I've been at my mother and father-in-law's, very gracious, and just like to socialize, you know. And like my mother-in-law said, we hadn't seen him in a while. Kind of gotten away from that. We used to go there when the kids were little. We would go there every Sunday. That was pretty amazing. That's how I met my wife, was going there after church. because her mother invited me to come, and I would just sit there with the family and eat. And I, you know, very nice place. The house that they have now, it's getting, I mean, they've been there over 30 years. It's starting to get, you know, I mean, it's kind of well-worn, you know what I'm saying? But I was thinking about moving into a new place, and I thought, you know, you go on vacation. You got a lot of times you go to a fancy place. You know, you're in Florida or somewhere. You're just somewhere, and the place is fancy, and you expect it to be. You expect it to be new, and you have to figure things out because things don't work the same as they do back in your old familiar place. I was thinking, and there's so many things that even though you've been in a place for just a couple of years, you're used to it now. Now you're in a new place. The refrigerator, oh, it's over here. This, no, it's not in this drawer. This doesn't do this, you know. And I thought, what is God creating for us in heaven? Those of us who love Jesus, who follow him, that's a promise. I'm creating a place for you. And I thought, I have a feeling it's more like a very welcoming, warm, familiar place. I don't think it is. It's going to be like, oh, wow, there's all brands making new. How do we do this? You know, I don't know. It was just kind of a silly thought. I know you're probably like, what is wrong with this guy? You know, think about that. But I have heard Ravi Zacharias talk about it, and I challenge you to do the same when he spends a few minutes talking about kind of awakening, realizing you're in a new body, and you're reaching out, and you're breathing heavenly air. It's and the way he describes it, it's like, wow, that's really exciting. I mean, so in a way, it'll be completely different. But you just kind of get that feeling. I don't know. It's interesting because I've run into people who kind of would like to move. You know, don't you, you know, you've been there for a while. Even my mother and father-in-law thought about it over the years at certain times. Oh, I think we're about ready, you know, and you think you want to move, whatever. I right now I'm at that point where I say, stay put. I mean, man, it's, yeah, that's tough. It's unsettling. It really is. And then trying to find everything is
the sound of life.
Boy, have I got a really cool story for you. It's pretty amazing. Her name is Lori. Now get this. She was 5 months old. Five days old when she was adopted in 1965. And she has a great family. I guess the family that adopted her had lost their biological child just a few days before that. And the church they went to found out about Lori. Well, you know, and she got adopted. And so she knew all about that.
I was young when I found out. But then as I got older, it's like a void. Nobody would help me. So I just came to a point in my life that I would have to accept that I probably would never meet her. And then my brother got me the DNA test. Denise emailed me and said, I have an aunt who had a baby in 1965, and she had to give the baby away, and we think you're that girl. And I lost it, like screaming. Can you imagine? Like, it was crazy. So, yeah, I just cried and cried and cried, and then I called her for the first time on Mother's Day.
Wow. And they've been talking and calling and meeting ever since. She's 73 now. The mother is. And what she didn't know was the mother was trying to find her as well, too. Yes. And so it was really pretty cool. The mother had some health issues that she really thought that her biological daughter should know about and stuff like that. So it worked out kind of neat, like she said, when her niece told her, and through a set of circumstances. I mean, you know, now they're connected. They connected on the beach. That was pretty cool. They kind of walked toward each other, and they were all so excited, and she's still screaming every day. It's really neat. And they talk on the phone or text every day. And they see each other in person as much as they can. She said, it has changed my life. You know, she said, I always just kind of wondered. Oh, it's just very interesting. It was a closed adoption, so none of the lawyers she contacted or anybody was going to say anything because that's the way it was. But she said, you know, it really changed my life. I have friends who have said they have never seen me smile as much as I do now. We're trying to make up for lost time. Neither mom nor daughter can believe how many similarities and how much love they share. She said, you know, I was raised by a wonderful family. I'm blessed. I was loved, you know, but to see somebody that I look like, it's incredible. We stand like each other. We have the same mannerisms. It's really, really weird and cool in a really good way.
Hey, this is Crowder, and you're listening to Cup of Joe Morning Show. It's my favorite. It's how you start your day, and your day is going to get better and better.
Did you see where there was a big pro-life rally? It was very surprising, really, and it happened in Ireland. I think it was yesterday. It's actually very pretty cool. I just like to brag on, you know, you probably saw that video of the two kids. They're toddlers and preschoolers, but they can really run. They're that age where they're very emotive, and they recognize each other on the street in the city, and they're running down the sidewalk greeting each other. And it's really pretty cool, and it spread like wildfire. Why? Because it's human nature, and it's so fresh, and there's nothing contrived about it. It's just wide open. We love life. Come on. We really do. And I think it's people are taking a stand for life more and more. So can I brag on a global organization called CareNet that really has a network of life-saving stations? That's really what you are. You volunteers are there, or even if you're one or two of the people at a CareNet pregnancy support center in a town that actually gets paid for what you do. Thank God for your perseverance and your expertise. May God bless you today. CareNet has saved almost 748,000, almost 750,000 babies since 2008, and they have provided for over a million mothers. And all that is just because they love you. It's just all because of God's love. That is what created all of that. And the fact that, hey, life is precious. And anytime you don't think life is precious, just check social media. And you see a couple little preschoolers hugging each other on the street. Just unabashedly, you know, because they're friends. I just think it's an example of how, you know, we love it when human nature comes together and says, hey, this is really a good thing. I just think that's neat. And just pray and lift up the CareNet organizations right now today for a special blessing from God. Appreciate you guys very, very much.
The Sound of Life.
Her name is Daisy May. She's from the UK. She's like any other fifth grader. She loves gymnastics. She likes English over math. And she did something pretty amazing. She became the first child double amputee to walk in a fashion show. That was in New York Fashion Week last Friday. And she just really, as it kind of came about by chance. Her dad said she was at a London Kids Fashion Week, where she even broke out a cartwheel. So I think the big thing that she's showing is that, yes, I'm different. I was born with a disease. Well, she's not really saying that, but, you know, that's what happened to her. They had to amputate her legs. But here she is kind of as an overcomer. So I think that's pretty cool and encouraging, and her dad's very encouraging. That's kind of what she got into by chance, he said. And it just kind of happened. So that's got her dad. I mean, God bless her dad for encouraging her and saying, let's do this. And she, she said, or the lady that really sponsors her said, I want people to see that beauty is not one-sided. It's a multifaceted thing. So she was asked, Daisy May was asked, what advice do you have to children like yourself? Children, listen up.
Just never give up and just do what you can do.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Love your radio station. I listen to it every morning. It wakes me up. It inspires me. It gets me going.
The Sound of Life.
You know, I was kind of thinking and looking at this story. We kind of got a theme going of kind of women overcomers. One was a 9-year-old girl who had to have her legs amputated when she was younger, obviously, because of a disease. And she is overcoming and going in areas where people like that have never been before. It's pretty amazing. There's a woman over in Connecticut who is a fairly young woman, and a lot of times she gets mistaken. People run up to her and say, can you tape my ankle? She said, you need to see the trainer for that. They assume that she is the trainer on the football field. Ah, yes. You see where I'm going? But it's interesting because I was thinking of that in light of Bible authority and the fact that, you know, back not all that long ago, people, when they would delve into scientific matters, came out of a biblical position. And now it almost seems like they're clashing, like two teams on a football field. But the proof is in the pudding, right? And archaeology is really digging up very, very, just one after the other, proof that what was written down years ago in the Bible was true, absolutely true. The names, the places, they're all falling in the line is true. So I imagine if you're a woman football coach, whatever level, a woman coach on any level. So the proof is, do you know what you're talking about? And she certainly does. She happens to be the first woman in the state of Connecticut to coach high school football. So right there, that's a trailblazer. And she was saying it used to happen back in the day, but not so much anymore because now she's getting more well known. I'm still looking for her name is Jennifer Garzone, and she came up in sports. I mean, as you might imagine, she grew up playing all kinds of sports, soccer, things that are more like women's sports, but she actually played football, and I didn't realize there are women's teams in football. And like someone said, that is kind of considered not only, it's like a man's sport. So here she is, a woman who is head of it, but people will tell you in a heartbeat she is more than qualified. And she's not the first female women's coach in the country by any means. So there you go. I mean, you've got a professional NBA professional basketball team has an assistant coach is a woman. So just very interesting kind of a thing right there. I just thought it was, I didn't know there were teams called Danbury Wreckers, the Connecticut Crush. I like that. I submit that Bill Belichick, the coach of the New England Patriots, should change their name. How about the Connecticut Crush? Wouldn't that be cool? They'd probably never fly, would it? They're around Hartford, by the way, the Danbury Wreckers. Anyway, she's the head coach, and she's getting some publicity. And the thing that's interesting is that she got a phone call one day after the coach left, and they said, hey, you want to be the coach? She said, I'll do it. I will do it. I'll step in and do it. And she said, it's amazing. Just the sport itself, the camaraderie. It's one of the things about football that teaches a lot of life lessons there. And so I'm glad she's in there, part of that. That would be kind of amazing. I just kind of wondered if her thinking, what her thinking on the field would be like. Probably a lot like Bill Belichick.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
He's a radio announcer here, isn't he?
The Sound of Life.
I can't believe this happened 10 years ago. Sheila Moravati with her then toddler in a restaurant. And, of course, like a lot of restaurants, the one she was at, they give you a little pack of crayons for your kids to color with to keep them entertained. And that's what they did. Brand new box of crayons. And so she's checking out, paying for the meal, and she realized that, man, those crayons, I mean, he barely used the crayons. What do y'all do with those? We just toss them. What? And she noticed the tables around her were kind of doing the same thing. And she thought, you know, there are people that could use those crayons, people in education. I guess her first thought was, you know, when budgets are cut in school districts, first thing to go is crayons and things like that. The arts are the first things to go. I bet they could help out. Today, it's called Crayon Collection. And they are all over the United States and in 9 countries. And they've even been formally recognized by the U.S. Congress and Buckingham Palace for their achievements. And here they are, flying under the old Crayola crayon radar, right? I shouldn't have said Crayola, but it's any kind of crayon. They're trying to chip away at the 150 million crayons thrown away by restaurants every year. Now, see, this is a classic case of where somebody is in a situation that goes unnoticed time after time. And it's just one of those things that gets done. And one person notices and says, wait a minute. Let me check into this. Is there a way we could have those? Sure, you can collect them. And that's exactly what they do. So they have been able to completely support teachers, not just in one area of the classroom, but also they're raising awareness about why it's so important to not put the pressure on teachers, which we hear about. I hear about every year. So many teachers spend a certain amount of their money to provide so that their children in their care can have a great experience being in school. Pretty amazing. And as I was talking about with the high school kids that have never had an opportunity to color, they're in a kid in a world. I mean, color is just an amazing thing. It's a great invention. So there you go right there. Last year, the organization broke the Guinness World Record for most crayons donated to charity in 8 hours. I didn't even know that was a thing, by collecting more than 1 million crayons for Los Angeles schools. Whatever it is, they just want to get in on it and collect, and the kids benefit. So that's a win-win situation. People coming together and all that kind of stuff. How could that not be? When I tell you about how the whole crayon thing got started by a man, I pretty sure just took the Bible into his laboratory. And that's all he did.
Hey, this is Drew from We Are Messengers, and thank you for listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Oh, did you see the video of Dolly Parton with Luke and Joel and For King and Country doing the song God Only Knows? Wow, is that powerful. A lot of people talking about that. I will confess, I have been big on Dolly Parton since about 1988. I realize that's back before you were born, probably, but back in that day, she did something pretty phenomenal. She was in her heyday in the late 80s, and she was coming out with an album which I think turned out to be her most popular album, double platinum, whatever, how many ever million that is. It was called White Limousine. And cut number 10 on Dolly Parton's album was He's Alive. Don Francisco wrote a song some years before. It is a powerful, incredible song. And it's funny because I never heard anybody else do it. And it had been out for years, and she did it and put it on that album. She said, I heard it on the radio, and I loved it so much. And I'm going to tell you something. If you've seen her doing this, she does a live version of it, which is worthy of watching online. Man, it is worship big time. So I thought, wow, anybody who sings that song like she did it, you know she's there. You know it's part of her every fiber in her body. And I'll tell you something. That's what separates the really elite singers, I think, from just, you know, the regular, even very popular singers. I mean, you know, I don't name names, but she is just, wow, it just comes out of her. It's exciting, and it really excited the audience to see that. And the fact that she does things like that, she absolutely does. If you're sitting on a plane across the aisle from her and she says, we need to get together in the studio sometime, I'll give you a call, you're going to get a call from her. It's pretty awesome. So I have no idea how they met. I don't know the backstory behind that, but obviously Dolly Parton likes the song. She wants to do it, and it is as either Luke or Joel, I forgot which one, said, is just amazing. Yes, again, it's something that she believes with every fiber in her body and singing about it. What a gift that is. I mean, to be able to do that, you know, to really do that. It's pretty cool there.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
I remember that day in 2001, crisp and clear. It was a day that was, you know, very clear, crisp day. Everybody remembered how beautiful the day was. Back in 2001, Gene and Dan Potter, this is their story. They may be listening right now, as a matter of fact, but they were living in New York City then, a couple of blocks from the World Trade Center. Gene actually worked on the 81st floor. She was there that day. She said, boy, it just, that whole place shook, of course, and everything, and they knew. She said, it just sounded like a massive explosion. They were swaying from side to side. And she said, this is what she heard. This is not your time. We are with you. Your brother is with you. And she had lost her brother in 1999. She believes it was the voice of God, loud and clear, a message in the midst of the chaos. You're thinking, is this building going to fall? And I'm up 81 flights. How am I getting out of here? She explained. She made it to the staircase as the floor became engulfed in flames. She said, man, my heart was just palpitating, just a mile a minute. You know, but still, she's going down the staircase. She can recount. She recounts very clearly. And what came to her was, you and Dan will be blessed with a beautiful life. You will go forth. She said, I saw these green trees. Actually, it wasn't go forth. It was go north. I'm sorry. That's what she saw, these green trees. While all this is happening, I'm very nervous, making my way down. She said, Jean said, she believes God was reassuring her and prodding her to keep moving down the staircase. She said, I would say we were probably down in the 20s, somewhere like that. They started seeing firemen, which gave us all a sense of relief. She's going down, and one of those firemen was Vinny Giamona, who was my husband's lieutenant at Ladder 5. And I grabbed his arm, and I said, Vinny, be safe. I'll never forget the look in his face that day. It would be his 40th birthday, and he left behind a wife and four children, four little girls who are now grown, but I will never forget the look on his face, Gene said. He, of course, was one of 343 firefighters who perished that day, Lieutenant Vinny Giamona. Gene's husband, Dan, who was a firefighter at the time, was in Staten Island, made his way there. He said, I was a couple blocks away when I realized how dreadful the whole situation was. And he got there, and he thought, I got to go find my wife, and went and knocked on the apartment door. Nobody was there. And he went outside and sat on a bench and put his head down to pray. and a photographer, an Associated Press photographer, took a picture of him, and you may very well have seen that. It traveled all around the world, kind of an iconic image of that day. It's pretty amazing. Thanks, you know, that it was just a natural reaction. A lot of prayer going on that day and days after that. He felt that God told him to go back to the apartment, and he did, and he heard the phone ring, and his wife was there, and I guess his father got in touch with him and told him where she... Oh, I know what it was. The phone was ringing. The father got in touch, said, Gene got in touch with me. I'd tell you where he is and stuff. And they had a reunion, of course, there, and she said he just looked horrified, you know. But Gene was sharing in the press, and she shared in her book since then, God is a loving God. If you turn over your pain to him, he will pull you through it. He will heal your heart. I trust him implicitly, and I give him my life with that. Use me for your glory and whatever I can do for you, Dan said, praying at the same time. They lived in Pennsylvania for a little while, and now they're back in upstate New York, in a small town, of course.
The Sound of Life.
I have to tell you about a place that you may know about that is a very difficult place to be a follower of Jesus. The most difficult on the earth is North Korea. I guess people go back and forth between China and North Korea more than you'd like to think. Incredibly dangerous to be able to do that when you're evangelizing. I mean, you are at the top of the most endangered person on earth. It is amazing. There was a Chinese missionary living along the border with North Korea, and I say that was because he was there until recently, and he shared the gospel with North Koreans. He would go back and forth. He lived near the border, he would, you know, just go back and forth, I guess, and all this, and he just told everybody about God. The pastors that knew him said he just gave his life. He gave hope to me and many other North Koreans. And just bear this in mind because, there's an International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, coming up very shortly. He was taught that all missionaries were terrorists when he was a child. They told us that a missionary will be nice to you at first, but when they get you to their homes, they'll kill you and eat your liver. I'm sorry, that's what they said. And as an adult, he fled across the border because he had no work or food in his village, and he picked mushrooms to sell, make a living, was hampered because he didn't speak the language of Chinese. But in the mountains, I met a man. He said, I can sell those for you. He didn't cheat me. He didn't give me all, you know, he gave me all the money. He was honest with him. And his name was Pastor Han, and he led a church in China, in a town that I would have very much difficulty pronouncing. And one day, he said, I asked, why would he do this for himself? He himself was in great danger for assisting North Koreans. He said, it's because I'm a Christian. And that made him afraid initially. And he thought he's gonna do bad things to me, and he just kept telling him God is real. There is hope for every person. God is forbidden in North Korea, of course. Nobody says that word. We know it's an act of treason to speak the name of God. Can lead to soldiers coming in the night. There will be no trial, but the pastor's boldness bore fruit, and that's what he did. One day I asked Pastor Han for a Bible. He knew that if I was caught with a Bible, my life would be in danger. But over time, I persuaded him. I showed the Bible to my wife. At first, she refused to even look at it. Why would you bring that here? She cried. And then, if anybody reported her, they'd be arrested. But over time, his wife, too, learned that God is real. And that's where they found their real hope. And that's what he did. He has been credited with leading over 1,000 people to Christ in a place where mentioning the word God, having a Bible, think the rumors like that will put you right on the top of the endangered species list. It's just absolutely amazing. Well, it did. And this missionary was assassinated recently. Absolutely. They were coming after him. I guess somebody, told, and, that's what they know. is going to happen, but they know the truth. It's absolutely incredible. There's even a Voice of the Martyrs video about him. I'm going to post this article for you because, as I said, it's coming up 1st of November. I think it's the first Sunday in November. That's a great thing for your church to get in on, is International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. And I can't think of someone, it's an incredible example of a person in the entire history of Jesus followers, a couple of thousand years. I don't think there's ever been a place, even in middle of Rome, in the Apostle Paul's time and stuff. It's just really, really amazing what God is doing there, in the face and the people that he's using are just incredible heroes.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.